Okay, it's 11:10. Let's get started. Are there any questions? So, regarding tutorials this week, I have a question for you. The intention had been to release a tutorial last Friday, and I noticed that that didn't happen. So given that the tutorial lasts over 2 weeks anyway, it seems like one way of dealing with this is to simply say, we won't have a tutorial this week, and we'll have our tutorial next week as usual. The other thing we could do is have a tutorial this week, but leave it open for just dealing with any questions you want to bring. How many would like to see us not have a tutorial this week? Hands up if you'd like that. How many would like to see us have a tutorial this week, but with any whatever questions you bring? Relatively small numbers. Okay, I will consult and there will be an email letting you know which of those two we're going to do. There will definitely be an extra tutorial this week on the 23rd. You can prepare for that in the usual way by downloading one of the past class exams. There's a lot of mumbling. Oh, so the extra tutorial are for people that feel they want some extra tuition and there's something specific you're supposed to do for that, which is do a previous exam. How many people would like to do a previous exam and bring that to their tutorial this week? Right, relatively small numbers, so that's why. But thank you for the question, that's very helpful. You're still confused.
Yes. Well, I'm confused with the fact that people don't want to have a tutorial. I mean, if you don't want a tutorial, we can just not show up.
Yes, it had occurred to me that that's an option, to just have the tutorial and have people not show up. But that's maybe not a good use of our resources to pay the tutors to show up and then not have many people show up. So that's why I wanted to find out how many people would show up. Right, so you will get an email about what we're doing with tutorials. There will definitely be an extra tutorial this week on Wednesday for those people that want it. As I said, just download a class or final exam and do it and bring your results. As I said here, it's to be confirmed. I expect there will not be an extra tutorial next week on the 30th because that is a strike day. Everybody all set with the mock exam? Any questions about that? Good, okay. I saw somebody's thumb go up. That's always a good sign. And the competition, I mentioned that there might be a delay to the deadline. Again, that will be circulated later because it's Phil Scott that has to decide that. And after asking him about it yesterday, I've not heard back from him. So as soon as I hear back, we'll email everybody with what the deadline's going to be. I expect it's going to move by at least a day, possibly more than that. We will see. Question? Where is the mock exam? It's in, did I say there? No, it's Appleton Lab West, I believe, right? On the fifth floor? Right, on Friday it's in Appleton Lab North, also on the fifth floor. Sorry? So Monday through Thursday, West Lab, Friday, North Lab, all on the fifth floor of this building. Yes?
How will we get to know the results of our mock exam?
How will you get to know the results of your mock exam? We're probably going to simply auto-mark it. That is, we'll run it through the tester that tells you whether your answers were absolutely correct or not, and then we'll give you back the results of that. Either at tutorial or by email, probably at tutorial next week. We're not going to mark the mock exams by hand because that's very expensive, but the final exams are marked by hand. So you won't get partial credit on the mock exam. You will get partial credit on the final exam. If you're very keen to know what I get partial credit on this question, you can, of course, ask your tutor. Okay, is that clear enough? I heard lots of mumbling there. Did that mumbling generate any good questions? Right, mumbling can be an excellent source of questions. No. Okay. Are you ready for more monads? More mumbling. All right. So we went through lots of stuff, right? We went through the pineal gland. We went through commands that did things, if they were ever performed. We finally discovered that you could actually perform them by defining main. And we actually did something. We echoed lines capitalized. And then I showed you the do notation and how to define your own monads. And today, we are going to see a bunch more monads. Really, a remarkably large number of things turn out to have the structure of a monad. And that turns out to be remarkably convenient. So today, I'm going to show you how to use monads to do two things. Not one, but two things that will be very useful throughout your computing career. One is building parsers. So a parser takes a string and finds the structure of that string and returns a value. For instance, we know how to take a data type representing a proposition, and to show that, to convert that into a string, it's quite convenient to do the inverse operation. Given a string representing a proposition, create the tree that represents the proposition. So that's what a parser does for you. And we'll show you today how to use monads to build parsers. I will also show you something never before shown to an Informatics 1FP class, how to use monads to build QuickCheck. Okay? So you'll see by the end of today how to build QuickCheck. So let's get started. So the first thing is the list, right? We have lists all the time. Turns out lists have the structure of a monad. So here's a way of taking something that you know and understand really well, the list, and making it into something you don't understand, the monad. But hopefully this will give you a little bit more insight into monads, and also you'll see the same kinds of structures cropping up again when we discuss parsers. So understanding that lists are a monad, I hope will be a little bit helpful for that. So you remember the way you define a monad is you define these two operations, return and bind. So return takes a, so in general, return takes an A and returns an M of A, where M is your monad. So if our monad is list, it would take an A and return a list of A. Bind takes an M of, bind takes an M of A and a function from an A to an M of B and returns an M of B. And you remember what this means is do this computation. It will yield a value of type A. Apply the function to the A. That will yield a computation of type B. Do that computation and return the result. And so we've combined this computation and this computation into a bigger computation that returns a value of type B. Now, up to now, our computations were things that did things like read characters from the terminal or write things out on the terminal. Sorry, read characters from the keyboard or write characters out on the terminal. But lists correspond to a computation that can happen many times and give you many answers. Right? How many times have you said to somebody, so the computation you're setting them is, tell me your favorite color. And instead of just saying blue, they say blue, red. Right? So they're coming up with different answers. Right? Sometimes you might ask somebody, what's your favorite color, and they won't answer at all. So one possible way of looking at computation is something that returns many possible answers. This is called non-determinism. And you can view lists in that way. So the trivial computation, the one that does nothing, is the one that just returns x. So we return a list containing just x. But if m is a computation that returns lots of things potentially, then what we're going to do is draw x from m. Now we've got x, we've got this function k that's going to return another list. So apply k to x, draw y from that, and return y. So it's just a list comprehension. Now, there are other ways we could write that, right? We could use recursion. We could say nil followed by k is the empty list, because you can see that's what this gives. Or we could say if we have a list with head x and with tail x's followed by k, then apply k to x, bind k onto x's as well. Both of these give list, so concatenate them. So what does this say? Well, if m is a computation that returns many possible answers, let x be each of those, apply k to each of those, that will give you an even bigger bunch of answers, return that. The most compact way of defining m followed by k is to just say, apply k to each thing in m. So m is a list, we apply k to each thing in it. K returns a list, we now have a list of lists, we concatenate that to get back to an ordinary list. So is that good for anything? Well, remember that any time, I'll go back and show it to you. Where did it go? There it is. Anytime you have a bind and, anytime you have bind defined actually, you don't even need return, we have this do notation that lets us write, instead of saying E1 followed by bind X1, E2 followed by bind X2, and so on, we can just say X1 drawn from E1, X2 drawn from E2, and so on. This is a nice compact notation. Now, when we pick the monad, what do you think the do is going to be similar to? Make a guess. What's our most favorite thing about lists? The list comprehension. So it turns out that this is very similar to a comprehension notation. Let me show you how that works. All right, so the bind operation seems a bit silly, but it turns out to be exactly the right thing to give us a do notation that's almost exactly like comprehensions. So right, let's find all the pairs ij for I drawn from 1 to n and j drawn from I plus 1 up to n. So pairs of 4 should be all the pairs of numbers where the second one is greater than the first, because here we're starting from I plus 1. We've got 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 4, 2, 3, 2, 4, and 3, 4. Here's a different way of defining that using comprehensions. So pairs prime of n is going to be do draw I from 1 to n, draw j from I plus 1 up to n, return the pair ij. So you can see that there's a pretty close correspondence between these, just this thing that's at the beginning gets written at the end with return in front of it. So this is great. It meant if nobody gave us list comprehensions, but they did give us monads, then we could get by without the list comprehensions. We could create them for ourselves using do notation. And that's very handy because, for instance, maybe is a lot like a list that contains 0 or 1 elements. That's the way maybe works. Turns out maybe, therefore, also forms a monad. You can look up the definition of that for yourself. And then you can use do notation to process maybe stuff, which is very handy. There are many ways in which that's useful. Now, there's some extra structure on monads that we're going to need. Some monads also have a 0 and a plus. So there's another type class called monad plus. This is just like a monad, but there's more. Not only do you get a return, not only do you get a bind, but also you get a 0 and a plus. 0 being, of course, the identity for plus. And it turns out that in many ways, return is like 1, bind is like times, 0 is like 0, and plus is like plus. I'll give you an example. For lists, if this is a list of length n, and say that this was always a list of length m, right? Here the length varies depending on the value returned from this. But let's say this was always a list of length m. What would be the size of the return thing? Yes? If this is length n and this is length m, it'll be n times m. So it'll be the product of the length of the two lists. If this one was always the same length. It's not, so we just add up all the lengths of this, which you can see is similar to the product. Similarly, return, of course, is always a list. Right? Return is always a list of length 1. This always gives you a list whose length is the product. 0 is always a list of length 0. And m pluses concatenate. And indeed, if you concatenate a list of length m and a list of length n, you get a list of length m plus n. So double plus is a lot like plus. So we're just going to define 0 for a monad to be, for the list monad to be the empty list, monad plus to be list concatenation. This knows monad plus is the way we would get something other than a list of length 1. Right? Before this, we only had return, which gives us a list of length 1. Lists are only interesting if you could get shorter or longer lists, and that's what m0 and m plus give us. A particularly useful function is guard. Guard takes a Boolean and returns something in a monad that has a plus. In fact, we only need the 0. So if it's false, we return the 0. If it's true, we return the empty list. So this sort of left false to 0 and true to 1. Why is that useful? We'll see an example in a minute. And notice that just like concatenate can be defined as the fold R of double plus and the empty list, monad sum is the fold R of monad plus and monad 0. So typically, we're going to expect plus to be associative and to have monad 0 as an identity. So M sum in this case is just like concat. So here's another way of defining pairs that makes use of this guard, right? What about the fact that we can put guards in comprehensions? So you can say all pairs ij for I drawn from 1 to n, j drawn from 1 to n, I less than j. Well, again, we can just say do I drawn from 1 to n, j drawn from 1 to n, do a guard by I less than j. How is this going to work? Well, if the guard is false, it returns m0, and you'll see that that just makes the that whole bit of the list vanish. On the other hand, if it's true, it returns a unit list containing nothing, and you'll see, well, that multiplies the whole thing by 1. In other words, it leaves it unchanged. So this either says keep going or drop this possibility out. And then we return ij. So again, this does exactly what we expect. It returns all the pairs where the first component is less than the second component. That's a very powerful technique that you can get just by defining the right operators for m0 in this case. Okay, so let's look at using that to build a parser. So the hardest thing to understand about parsers is the type. What we really want, I'll just write this on the board. What we really want for a parser is to go from a string to an A for some arbitrary A. So for instance, if we're parsing propositions, A would be the type proposition, which remember was defined to be true or false or a variable or an and or an or. Now in general, when you just parse part of something, you have the remainder left to parse. So you can't, to parse something, you've got to break it up into smaller parts. And when you break it up into smaller parts, there's the remaining unparsed string left to deal with. So in general, to do that, we're going to need to do this. Take a string and return an A string pair. So this is the value we've parsed. This is the remaining string that we have yet to parse, and we better do something with it. But sometimes there will be many different possible parses, and we'll need to combine these. We might want to say, well, either you're going to parse an AND expression, something with an ampersand in the middle, or an OR expression, something with a vertical bar in the middle, and then you need to combine those in some way. So it's going to turn out that it's very convenient to say, well, give me all the parses you can find, and then we'll deal with those. So then we're going to be using this non-determinism idea and return a list of every possible parse that we can find. So this is going to be the type of parsers. It takes a string and returns a list of A string pairs. So you can see that's the type that I've given here. Right? A parser of A is, so I've used new types. I've got this parser constructor. And notice up here, when I export parser, I don't export the constructor. And so that means it's an abstract data type. So that means I'm free to change this representation if I want to. That means that I can control that the necessary invariants are satisfied. The invariant, by the way, right, is that this is a string. This isn't just any old string, nor is it a Marks and Spencer string, right? But it will always be a tail, or the tail of the tail, or the tail of the tail of the tail. It'll be some end, some subsequence of this string at the end, because it's the remainder that we've yet to parse. So we'll just check that that invariant's always satisfied. So then, of course, to apply a parser, we just apply the corresponding function. So this just takes off that constructor parser. Okay, so parse, this is what we want to do. Given a parser of A and a string, we want to return an A. And how do we do that? Well, just let XT be drawn from apply MS, right? T is the remaining unparsed string. When we've parsed the whole string, T should be the empty list. There should be nothing left to parse. So we return the list of values X such that T is the remainder. So this is all possible parses. And then we look at that list. If it's empty, there was no parse. If it has one thing in it, we parsed it. It's X. And if it's longer than one, that means there are multiple different parses, and we say that was ambiguous. Okay, so we need to define the monad operations. So return X should just return an X and do nothing else. So what that means is we take the string, we return an X. The value is always X, no matter what you see. And we've consumed none of the string, so we return S as the whole unparsed string. This should remind you a lot of reading the input, because this is what we're doing. So now to parse an M followed by doing K, what we do is take S, apply M to S. That'll give us a list of all the parses. So X is the value parsed. T is the remaining unparsed bit. So we apply K to X to get the next parser. Notice that the parsing can actually change depending on what values you've parsed. So we apply K to X to get the new parser, and then we apply it to the string S. No, I haven't written S there. I've written T. Why? Well, we're parsing the string, right? We've parsed the beginning bit at S. T is the remaining unparsed bit. That's the bit we have to pass in here. So we pass in T, which is the remaining unparsed bit. We get out a value Y and a U, and we return Y and U. Okay. And parsers also form a monad with sums. So the zero thing is the parser that takes the string and returns no parses. It always fails. Right? So parser, you could think of something, you feed it a string and it gives you a bunch of answers. Right? You know people that you can feed them a question and they'll give you a bunch of answers. Do you know anybody that you ask them a question and they always look grumpy and say no? Right? There's no answer to this at all. So that's what M0 is in this case. It's the parser that takes the string and says, there's no way of parsing it. Plus of M and N is going to give us all the parses of M and all the parses of N. So we do that by saying apply M to S, giving all the parses, and apply N to S, the same S this time. So we've got lots of different parses of the same string, and we just concatenate them together. Notice that M0 is defined in terms of empty list, which is the zero of the list monad. And here it's defined using append, which is the plus of the list monad. So that might make you think, and comprehensions can be done as do's. Actually, I'm just using, oh, and look, this one's returning a unit list. That's the return of the list monad. So all of these structures for parsers come from the monad structure of the list monad. And in fact, you can build something that's like a parser over an arbitrary monad rather than lists, as long as it has sums. Okay, so let's build some parsers that do things. The most important parser is character. What this is going to do is read the string and return the very first character in it. So if the string is empty, we can't parse it and return a character. So we say there are no parses. If the string is non-empty, we say, right, we've parsed a character. The value that we've parsed is the head of this string. And the remaining unparsed bit is the tail, S. So it's just one parse that we return there. Guard, you remember we've already defined. Guard will turn out to be really useful. Because now we can do things like spot of P is going to take a character to bool function, something like isDigit, and return a parser of characters. So for instance, spot of isDigit is the parser for characters for which isDigit is true, that is, a parser for digits. So it means read a character, check to see if isDigit returns true, if so, return the parse, otherwise fail. And that's exactly how this is defined. Right? C drawn from char, so that means we've applied the character parser. Guard it by P applied to C. So that means if P applied to C is false, we say, nope, no successful parse. If P applied to C is true, we say, yes, give it the parse. And then we return as the value of the parse the character C that we read. So for example, let's load parser. It's OK with that. And then I can say parse. Oh, no, let's do apply. Apply spot isDigit to 123AB. What's this going to return? What do people think this is going to return? Sorry? Right. So in fact, it doesn't, you might think it's going to pull up all the digits, but spot returns a single character. Right? Char guess gets you one character. So it's going to find the one, check to see if one is a digit. Is one a digit? Yes. So it'll return one as the value and the remainder as the unparsed bit. Returns the character 1 and 23AB as the remaining unparsed bit. If I applied that again, I'd get the next digit. If I applied that to the tail, I'd get the next digit, so I could successfully do parsing. If I apply it to this, what am I going to get? Sorry?
Error.
So one person says error. Any other suggestions? I heard somebody say empty list. How many people think we'll get error? Indeed, empty list. There's no way, it's not an error to try to parse it, but you don't succeed. There's no way to parse this and get a digit out. A very important thing is token. So this is given a character, we've got the parser that's gonna match that character and nothing else. So token C is the same as spot something that's equal to C. So let's do an example. Let me do, that finds an A, and the remaining bit is B. And now let's say I'm looking for a plus sign. And that will work and give me the plus sign. On the other hand, if I'm looking for a plus sign and what's there is a minus sign, it will fail. So let's do something a little bit more complicated. Digit to int. Let's apply that to 1 plus 2 and a close parenthesis. What's this going to return? Is that what you expected, right? Spot is digit, picks up 1. Token plus picks up plus. Spot is digit picks up 2. We then return the result of converting those two digits to integers and adding them. And 1 plus 2 is 3. And then here, we get the remaining unparsed bit, which in this case is a close parenthesis. If instead the remaining unparsed bit was gobbledygook, you get 3 followed by gobbledygook. Okay, so there's a parser for you. Similarly, if you want to match a whole string, then if the string is empty, you're done. Return the empty string that you've matched. If its head is X and its tail is X's, well, y should be the token of x, it'll actually be equal to x. Y should be the result of matching x's, it'll actually be equal to x's, and then we return y cons y's. So that matches a whole string. There's also an operator sequence that can do that, but I'll let people look that up. And the last useful thing with parsers we can do is star, right? You remember from regular expressions? Star? So star of a regular expression matches 0 or more occurrences of the regular expression. Similarly, star of a parser will match 0 or more occurrences of the parser, right? When I showed you digit, you immediately want to do as many digits as you could. This is how you do as many digits as you can, you use star. So star of p is the same as either plus of p, where plus is 1 or more occurrences of p, or m plus, return the empty list. So we're going to return a sequence of all these things we parse. If we parse one or more things, we return it. Otherwise, we've failed. We've not parsed anything, so return the empty list. So we always succeed, but possibly we succeed by saying, I couldn't find anything. Right? P star, PSTAR doesn't always succeed in recognizing a whole string, right, but would always recognize, succeed on some initial segment of the string, possibly the empty list, the empty string. So plus, then, says, right, parse P, call X the value you've parsed, then do star P, zero or more, call X is the thing you've parsed, and return X cons X's. So let me show you an example of this running. Let's do star spot is digit applied to 1, 2, 3, AB. What's this going to return? It will succeed. Ah! Oh, right, I have to apply it, of course. So here's the parse we were looking for. 1, 2, 3, followed by AB, right? So all the digits are included. But notice we just said it's either of these, right? It concatenates the list. So we also get all the shorter things, right? It's also 1, 2, followed by 3, AB, or 1, followed by 2, 3, AB, or the empty list, followed by 1, 2, 3, AB. Okay? Let's see. Let's do something a bit more complicated. And this time I'm going to do a parse. So I'm going to get out all the ones for which it goes all the way and gives me the empty list. I'm going to do star token A plus token B. Things following each other, so I'll need to do X drawn from. So this is zero or more occurrences of an A or a B. And now let Y be drawn from plus. So this is one or more occurrences of a B or a C. And let's return the pair XY. So I'm looking for, oh, mismatched parentheses. That looks dire. Ah. I see what's wrong. I had one too many closed parentheses there. There we go. Yep, close. And let's apply that to AABBCC. So there are actually three ways of parsing this, right? Sorry, two ways, because we need, no, three ways. It can be AABB and then CC for the second one, or AAB and then BCC for the second one, or AA and then BBCC for the second one. Let's see if that works. Yes! There were three different parses. But it's okay, tell us what they were, because it gives us an error in that case. If we did an apply instead, we'll get those three that use, right? The ones within that get to the end are indeed all A's, all the A's and B's and the C's. Where's the next one? Here, AA, B, and B, C, C. And here's the other one. So it gave exactly the parses I said. Okay. And then we can do things like say, well, right, a parser for a natural is going to be do plus of spot digit. That'll give us a sequence of digits. Use read to convert that to the corresponding number. And negative would be a token, right, would be a minus sign followed by a natural number, and we return minus n. And then to parse an integer, you either parse a natural or parse a negative. So parse int will actually parse integers for us. Let's try that. And you see again, there's several different possible parses depending on whether it reads all the possible digits or not. So now let's use this to do something useful. Here I've defined propositions. Okay? A proposition is, this is the same definition we've had before. This is the same show function we've had before. Now we've got parser for these things. So to parse a variable, read a lowercase letter and return variable of that lowercase letter converted to a string. For false, read an F, return F. For true, read a T, return T. For not, look for parentheses around something, which is a tilde, followed by parsing a P, return not of P. For or, right, parentheses around something, find a P, find a vertical bar, find a Q. Same for and, but with an ampersand. How do we put parentheses around something? Find an open parenthesis, apply the parser, let x be the value parsed, find a closed parenthesis, return x. So it's very easy to say, do this thing, but with parentheses around it. And then we can actually define read in the right way. You have to define something called reads prec, which is going to be exactly the same as applying our proposition parser. So let's load proposition and do read of, what shall we do? Not P and Q. Oh no. Oh, it doesn't know that we're reading a proposition. We are reading a proposition. That returns not P and Q, printed out using show. So it looks exactly like what we parsed. But in between, there's actually parse tree built with the colon and constructor and the not constructor and the var constructor. Okay. So that's parsers. And now very quickly, in just 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes, let me give you a hint of how quick check works. So here we have micro quick check. And the way quick check works is a generator of A is something that's going to take a source of random numbers, which is called StanGen, and a size. This is the size of data to generate. And it returns a value of type A and another seed that you can use for generating the next random number. So these things written StanGen are random number generators. And the way to think of this, the way you get random numbers on computers, you start with a number picked at random, typically the time, and then you apply some complex numerical function to it to get another number and so on. And you just keep applying this function each time. So this starts out being the time, and this is the next number you generate from that, and so on. So in order to take a generator, we need to give it a size, and it's going to return a value of type A. But it can't just return A, it has to return an IO of A. Why? Because IO is how we read the clock to get the initial seed. So this says, read the clock to get the initial seed. This says, apply the generator to that seed and to the size s, and we'll get a value x and a new seed r1. That says, tell the system what the new seed r1 is and return x. We can make this into a monad, right? So to return x, right, we do nothing, right? We just take r at s, ignore the size, return the value x, and we haven't changed the seed r at all, so we just return it. To do m followed by k, apply m to this initial, right? We take an initial seed and a size. We apply m to the, we apply m to the seed and the size, and we get x and a new seed. K of x gives us the next generator. Apply that to the seed R1 and the same size. That gives us y paired with R2. And in return, y paired with R2. So that's a monad. And then we can do things like sized takes a function k that also expects the size. So we apply k to the size, right? So the size gets passed down by the monad, and then we can extract it using sized. Choose says, given a pair of values, range, return a value in that range. So like choose 1 to 6 is what we would use for a dice. One of says, given a bunch of generators, choose a number from, right, given a list of length g's, sorry, given a list g's, choose a number between 0 and g's, length of g's minus 1. So that'll be an element in the list, and just pick that element in the list. So it chooses at random among a group of generators. And then element says, okay, given a list of elements to generate an A, turn each of those lists, elements of that list into a generator using return, and then choose one of them using one of. So that's going to randomly choose something from this list. And then let's see how we use that. And then there are a bunch of other things, but let's see how that gets used to build generators. Oh, wait, one more thing you need to know. There's a class called arbitrary. And something gets entered into the class if the function arbitrary returns a generator of type A. So for instance, an arbitrary int chooses an int. And what it does is, notice, it uses the size. So basically, the size is going to be a number between 1 and 100. And the size is taken as a percentage of the number of bits to use. So there's 31 bits in a positive integer. So it chooses 31 times s div 100. Right? So when s is 100, it'll choose among all 31 bits. Otherwise, it'll choose among some smaller number. When s is just 1, it just chooses uses 1 bit. So then we choose a number between minus 2 to the n and 2 to the n minus 1, which is the range of integers. So it just chooses an arbitrary integer and chooses bigger and bigger ones as the size gets bigger. So it starts with small tests and then does bigger tests. To choose a pair, right, just choose an x. Choose a y, return the pair. So if A and B are types that we know how to generate arbitrarily, we can also generate AB pairs arbitrarily. Now, let's look at micro quick check test. So I've imported proposition, right? There's its definition. I want to be able to generate arbitrary propositions. Those of you who've seen the mock exam have seen exactly this code. So this is for doing quick check tests for arbitrary propositions. So we're going to define an expression expr of the size of the arbitrary proposition we want to generate. It's important to use the size to limit things, or else you could get really, really big propositions and the testing would never end. So we're going to say I want a proposition of around size n. So if the size is 0, then it's either going to be f or t or one of the elements p, q, r, s, t. So this could have just been written as return element false, true, or any of these with var applied to them. Lift m, I need to show you, oh, definition's down here. Finish off quickly. Similarly, to return an expression of size n, you can do one of true, false, a variable, a not, of an expression of size n minus 1, a plus of an expression of half the size, and another expression of half the size. And similarly, for lift M2, for OR. So lift M here, let's see. I carefully typed the code in, but in the wrong place. Here it is. Lift M, it's a lot like map. In fact, lift M for the monad of lists is map. Right? Just says, do x from M and return f applied to x. So given a function from A to B and an M of A, it returns an M of B. Lift M2 is the same, but it's a function from A to B to C. And then given an MA and an MB, it returns an MC. Notice what does this x drawn from M, y drawn from M. This is not zip. Right? This is Cartesian product for lists. Right? So every possible combination of x drawn from M and y drawn from M. So this was a list of length 2, and this was a list of length 3. There'd be 6 possibilities here. And that's exactly what we want. Here, right, this would be a list of, in this case there's no list, right? This is just a random possibility. This is another random possibility. It randomly picks from each of these and then combines them using AND. That combines them using OR. So here's a proposition. If I show P and then read it, where P is a proposition, I should get P back. Let's see if it works. So I've skipped the code that actually implements quick check, but I'll be posting this after the lecture, and if you want to go have a look at it, you can see it's only another 10 lines of code to mimic the basics of quick check and another 30 lines to do something very close to what quick check does. So the two versions, micro quick check, which has only another 10 lines, and mini, which has another 30 or so. But let's see if it works. Let's load. I haven't actually tested this one, I don't think. Let's see if it works properly. Load micro quick check test. And if we look at the end, right, we've actually defined a proposition that says read by, follow by, show. And we've defined a main routine. And we do one that's going to fail, which says check to see that the size is less than 15. Where this computes the size. Well, that one's going to fail because we're going to generate things up to size 100. So they'll get big enough to fail. But that one should succeed. Actually, let's do the mini one. Right, there we go. Read followed by show is P. And let's just check that that works. Check, prop, parse. So it's going to generate 100 different propositions, show them, read them, and check that it gets what it started with. Will it work? Did we write parse correctly to match show? Let's find out. Yes! See you next week.